D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan here with you at Bridgestone Arena. Joining us, Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. And Hutton, I was just reading this story on Sportico about the Super Bowl and ratings and things of that nature. According to Sportico, 115.1 million people tuned in to the previous Kansas City versus Philadelphia Super Bowl in 2023. 115.1 tuned into that game. Does this game outdo that game in terms of viewership?
Yes, I think it does. I think there's Kansas City fatigue, but there's the Super Bowl. you have the three-peat versus, and we can get into a long discussion about this. Have the Commanders won this game, had the Lions won, I'd be all about this dynasty ending, wrapping up, no three-peat. There's something very unlikable about the Philadelphia Eagles to me.
Interesting.
And it's a lot of little things. It's not like one big thing.
Is it because they booed Santa? Is it because – is that
still
it's that
they cussed me out, Willie, on the sideline when I was at Philly.
Oh, yeah. They didn't treat you very nice in Philly.
Don't mistake Philly fans for being, you know, the nicest people in the world now. Come on now.
The Philly fans and Baltimore fans were the only two fan bases that knew my name when I came out of the tunnel.
You should wear that as a badge of honor.
Exactly.
Wear that as a badge of honor.
In fact, I think they asked Delaney my name in the tunnel, and then they got after me is what happened.
Do you remember something particularly mean that was said to you, Hutton, that still sticks with me to this day?
You know, it was more about what was thrown at me.
Batteries by chance?
No batteries.
Okay.
No batteries. And as the great Doug Matthews would wish upon Tennessee fans, he longs for the days when Willie will know this. He longs for the days whenever urine is thrown at him at Florida games.
Nice.
He has said that before, which is hilarious. Nothing terrible. More or less like, you know, empty, you know, Coke cans or whatever, beer cans. But it was a drunk fest in the pregame, and it was phenomenal. It's everything I wanted to be in Philadelphia, quite frankly. This is more about like Sirianni going after the fans earlier this season, or AJ like chirping back and forth with his good friend at quarterback. Like, it's just off. Barkley's very likable. I'm rooting for that storyline. If the season ended today, and it doesn't, would Barkley be the MVP? That's a great debate based on where he is now versus where he was at the end of the season, where he's not going to win. He's not even being like mentioned there, which is ludicrous. But Kansas City, they always finish. It's annoying, but it's respect. Like, I respect the hell out of it, and there's something about that dynamic I want to see one more time, and it has nothing to do with me like liking any individual on the Chiefs side of things. It's more or less like irritating factors for Philadelphia for me.
Well, who was it? It was Nate Burleson. We played the clip earlier this week. It was Nate Burleson after the game who said, "I understand if you all have Chiefs fatigue, but be grateful you're alive to witness history." I was like, all right, step down from that pulpit, my friend.
It's not that serious.
Let me mention the ratings real quick. Mm-hmm. 58 million watched Buffalo try to go and take down Kansas City. The Swifties play a factor in this. They do. That's one consistent. If I'm watching at a bar and the Kansas City's on, random women will walk by and ask random people, have they shown Taylor yet? Like, it's crazy that they're still like glued to it just to see a flash of her in the booth wearing gloves.
I will speak to this from firsthand experience. My wife, who is not a sports fan in the slightest, I had the AFC Championship game on the other day, and she was asking me, "Hey, has Taylor been shown in the suite yet? What's Taylor wearing tonight?" You know, like that sort of thing. So it does play a big role. That will factor into the number of people who view into the game in a couple of weeks.
And then, you know, 44 million tuned in to watch Washington lose to Philadelphia, and that's a drop from where the AFC Championship was. But 44 million surpasses practically anything you can come up with that's a non-NFL event, period. So, I mean, it's the Super Bowl. People will tune in. I don't know how much the halftime show pulls in viewership this year compared to other ones with Kendrick Lamar. It'll pull. But, maybe the ratings are down, maybe they're up. But, yeah, I think more people will tune in this go-around to watch this rematch than they did 2 years ago. Maybe not as much as last year, though.
The one thing that's amazing to me about this, not just the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs are going for the three-peat, trying to become the first NFL team to win three consecutive Super Bowl championships. None of the previous repeat champions even made it to the Super Bowl. This is the first time a team that has a chance at the three-peat has actually made it to the Super Bowl, which adds a little bit more intrigue on my part. I know that a lot of airtime and a lot of pixels have been spilled about the Chiefs and the refs. Where do you stand on this national dilemma we seem to be having?
Well, I thought the calls that went against Houston were egregious, quite frankly. I don't know. It's not on the official. It's the setup. They are told if they are in doubt on roughing the passer, when in doubt, throw the flag. I don't know how you officiate a game like that. That's the only play in football where they are told if you are in doubt, throw it. So that's what they did. That's going back to the Texans game where Mahomes is a runner, and then all of a sudden, because he is attempting at the very beginning to slide, again, he's a protected quarterback at that point. Last week, I didn't have a problem with the spot. I know there's a lot of controversy with the spot itself. They still had the football again. If I will say, if you're going to change a rule and try to get a chip put in the football or whatever it might be, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes combined to change an overtime rule together. So maybe we could see something there that what they're trying in like the USFL with spotting the football. Look, the whole referee controversy is something that's never going to end. It's the fact that Kansas City seems to always have it go their way. 17-0 in one possession games is their record now. Their last 17 games, 17-0. It's remarkable. You mentioned the three-peat. I mean, in going back to some of the teams that had the opportunity to do it, you know, the Patriots didn't get back to the Super Bowl. And that's an era where you had Brady, but Brady had Manning. You know, like, there is no other true rival for Mahomes in the playoffs. I mean, it's Allen, but it's not really Allen. He's 0-4. They're 0-4 their last eight. Buffalo is on the road in the postseason. So while Manning had Brady and Brady had Manning, it's Mahomes, and then everyone else is kind of battling for that next spot. And it's intriguing because of the era we're in the passing era that's now more run than ever than we've seen the last, you know, several years. And it's still Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid lapping everyone. And if I may, something I'm going to mention later today on the show on Hot Mic, I think there were more than just Houston and Buffalo so far that could take down Kansas City this postseason. The teams that had an opportunity to hire a coach, I don't know why we didn't see more of Steve Spagnuolo mentioned for head coaching jobs. Because if you want to take out Kansas City and what they're doing, you take away Steve Spagnuolo from the last Super Bowl win last year and then what they've done this year defensively, that is a huge wound to what Kansas City accomplishes over the last year and a half.
And I think that brings up my question that I wanted to ask you, because, listen, we know how great Patrick Mahomes is, but you just talked about, okay, Spagnuolo being the top defensive coordinator in the NFL right now and what his defenses have been able to do, frankly, the last 2 years, because without that defense, Kansas City isn't making it to the Super Bowl last year. They're not winning it. Their defense stepped up big. And this year, because of the close games, a lot of it was because of what the defense did and or the special teams. Now, Pat made plays when he needed to, but the defense always gave them an opportunity to win a game or put them in a position to seal a game. So that brings me to my question about the Titans, because everybody can't have a Patrick Mahomes. And even when you do have a Patrick Mahomes, sometimes even Patrick Mahomes can't win the game for you alone. He needs a defense or other players. So in regards to the Titans, say if they don't get that quarterback in this year's draft, do you think this regime is good enough to amass a good enough talent to still win with the subpar quarterback?
Are they going to draft Abdul Carter?
maybe at number one, maybe. But it's like, okay, say if they draft a quarterback, it's not working out. But do you believe that this unit can then surround the quarterback with enough good players that even though we don't have that guy or he hasn't shown that he's going to be an elite quarterback, we can still win in the meantime?
Okay. That question comes down to who they already have, Mace. Mm-hmm. Is Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat, are they going to be the interior version of what we see in Kansas City, for instance? Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to be dominant.
You can say they can be because they've shown it. Yeah, this season.
Yeah, but like, are they going to amass more talent to put around if they don't mm-hmm. have the quarterback solution? We know that to win at the highest level, they have to have a quarterback solution.
Yes.
But to be immensely better than where they were, which is at the bottom of the league, they have to have the guys that they have already obtained step up and be that version of that player that they envisioned. Like, and we've seen that early from Jeffrey Simmons, the gradual steps and progression of a career. And now we need to see him truly take over after getting paid. And that's paired next to Tavondre Sweat, a second-round pick that, you know, can do a lot more mm-hmm. for that defense. L'Jarius Sneed has to play and play well. You know, like, he's got to be on the field. Lloyd Cushenberry has to be an every-game starter and be the veteran leader of the offensive line. Those are things that they were saying last year right after they signed these players. Mm-hmm. Or last year when they were, you know, putting together their roster, those things still have to come to fruition, and then you add pieces to that to supplement what you're doing in the draft. But they don't have enough draft picks right now to truly look at this and say, okay, without the quarterback, what do they do? Unless they break the bank and go sign a three-year starter, a three-year contract, and get a Sam Darnold type player, and he continues at the pace that he was on with a different coordinator and a different play caller. Like, those are a lot of ifs. So, you know, do they have the pieces now? No, we just saw the reaction and the response to the questions that we were asking last offseason. They need the quarterback, and you know, unfortunately, it doesn't seem as though there are just surefire solutions that sit right in front of them as they hold the number one pick.
And that's why I asked the question, because everyone thinks, and I'm guilty at it at times, and I shouldn't be, but think that, oh, you got to get a Patrick Mahomes. You got to get a Lamar Jackson. You have to – it has to be a Jaden Daniels the first year or a C.J. Stroud the first year in order to have any chance, when in actuality there's only three or four of those guys in the league, maybe five, that are elite quarterbacks. Right. Now, there are some that could be on the cusp, but when those guys are on the cusp, usually the elite quarterbacks are starting to phase out, so it sort of balances itself out. But my thing is, everybody wants that quarterback, but realistically, we all know – you ain't going to find that quarterback, so how do you win in the meantime?
Well, to your point, Jalen Hurts is going to his second Super Bowl before Allen or Jackson has reached one.
And Philly was able to surround him with good talent.
Yep, and they with the talent that meshed well, at least mm-hmm. for so long. I mean, there's something up with Hurts and A.J. Brown, right? Like, they go from working out during COVID to prior to the trade to, you know, whatever. But yeah, like, you mesh with him. You also draft receiver, and now you go and you work in Saquon Barkley, and that's the expectation. But you also, like, it's also the staff, you know, like they added the right pieces to their coaching staff. Sirianni's not calling the plays. Those are things too that affect on the field performance in Philly, and that's after they had a success doing it a different way. So, you know, they add Fangio, a defensive coordinator. You know, the Kellen Moore, for instance. You get what I'm saying. Like, it's more than just players on the field, but it's players on the field. And their defense, too, to going back to where we started with this question, their defense also is able to rise to the occasion and make some big stops, big plays. And it's led by their scheme and their coordinator.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. So, Hutt, I'll ask you the philosophical question that we are going to tackle some on the show today. You just mentioned it. With there not being a Peyton Manning or a Joe Burrow or a Cam Newton, an obvious first overall quarterback that anybody would take, where the Titans are, should they trade down and get more picks?
I'm all for that, Willie. Okay, I'm doing that. Now, what type of haul am I getting? Maybe I don't get the same type of haul that it took for San Francisco to go get Trey Lance, for instance. Maybe I don't get that type of deal. But I don't know if those quarterbacks are going to garner that. Now, if you're moving up, you're going to pay the price to get your franchise quarterback no matter who you are. But here's the thought process, and I'm just thinking it through, why they would go ahead and draft quarterback. And I'm not for that. If the guy's not the guy, you're not sold on him being the franchise, and all chips are in on this player, you don't take him. But that would mean another team feels that way. Why did they hire Brian Callahan to begin with? It was the quarterback background. That's what, it was who he's been with more than what he's done. And the quarterback developer, right? Like, that has to play a factor in why he was brought in with Chad Brinker here, right? So I'm thinking, like, how much does that play a factor? If I'm Borgonzi, I'm not trying to factor in my head coach currently. I'm trying to factor in where I want to be 3 years from now. And Brinker has said the same thing. So if you're factoring in the three-year process, which, I mean, to be honest, guys, it's about the immediate future too. Just look in the rearview mirror and see what's happened to other guys who had a process. You have to think picks. You build through the draft. Look, Kansas City, if you want to build through Kansas City like Borgonzi's been and done, those are draft picks right there. And you do that by trading away the number one pick if there's not the organizational, talent at the position. The true, like, transcendent talent, you cannot pass on if it's by far and away the top player in the NFL draft that year. No matter how bad the draft is, you have to draft based on your draft and on your roster. This team is depleted of true elite caliber talent. If that guy's there, you can't pass on him. But it would be hard for me, Willie, to pass on a load of picks to set myself up for the future, both this immediate future and, 26 and 27.
Any impressions, because you probably look at it closer than we do. D-Mace, of course, worked with Fossil directly when Fossil was a younger coach. But any impressions of the coaching changes that jump out to you?
That's the one. I mean, they go from the worst special teams to the guy who's been a part of the best. It has the same feel of Bill Callahan as the offensive line coach last year. And you have the same type of results. And I would say special teams on the back end of the roster, that's how you piece together a strong special teams talented core. And his groups have always done that. And they've been very creative, too, on how they've done it. Through the Jeff Fisher era in St. Louis, they were known for always going to play Seattle and coming up with some way to manufacture some spark on special teams through Fossil, through Bones. Same thing when they moved to L.A., and he's bounced around some, but it's not due to anything other than, the coach is not working out with ownership. But good coaches have always tried to go after him and hire him. And, the Titans end up being fortunate that the Cowboys don't stick with Mike McCarthy because they upgraded in a significant way. It's a complete 180-degree turn from where they were.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow joining us on the program as he does every week. Hutton, great stuff, my friend. Let's talk next week.
No doubt. Hey, and I mentioned this, one quick thing on Bones Fossil. You go from learning on the job, it's a position where you're not doing that now, a coaching position. He's been there, done that. That's a huge positive for them. Always great to join you guys. Have a great rest of the week.
You as well, Hutton. Thank you. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the NFL draft coming up next. We're all about to get a lot smarter. We're all going to learn something.
Nobel Prize.
From a Nobel Prize winning economist as it relates to the NFL draft. That's a sentence I never thought I would say aloud. And you're probably wondering, what the hell is Adam talking about? And we'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. Nashville's best deal this week is Singletree Barbecue in Murfreesboro. Singletree Barbecue is a local veteran-owned and operated business only serving world-class barbecue with the perfect combination of sides and desserts. Get half off a $25 gift card now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Bridgestone Arena, Predators and Canucks tonight at 8 o'clock. Willie, yesterday you were referencing an article in passing You weren't able to remember it as we were discussing it.
But I
you,
misremembered, you, as Roger Clemens said back yes.
today. You found the article. It was written,
I found it.
It was written in April by Alec Lewis at The Athletic. The headline, NFL teams know the best way to draft, so why aren't they doing it? And a big part of this story is this paper that was written by Cade Macy and Richard H. Thaler. And if you're thinking to yourself, who the heck are these guys? I don't blame you. They are economists. By the way, Richard H. Thaler won the 2017 Nobel Prize in Economics. So I think he knows what he's talking about when it comes to these sorts of things. The name of the paper was Overconfidence versus Market Efficiency in the National Football League. It was written by, again, Cade Macy and Richard H. Thaler of the National Bureau of Economic Research. And you're hearing all of these big words and that some guy who won the Nobel Prize wrote a paper about the NFL, and you're thinking to yourself, what the heck? But this was the hypothesis of this paper, which was written in 2005. And if I recall correctly, Willie, it looked at NFL drafts between 1998 and 2004.
1988. And 2004.
Through 2004. So nearly two decades worth of a sample size. The hypothesis that these two look to study in this paper, quote, teams overestimate their abilities to delineate between stars and flops, and because of that, they overvalue the, quote, right to choose in the draft. And their findings, after examining every draft pick and trade from 1988 to 2004, teams massively overestimate their abilities to delineate between stars and flops. And because of that, they heavily overvalue the, quote, unquote, right to choose in the draft. I'll let you take it from here.
Well, I think it's particularly, I brought this up last summer or last year when it came out. Because I've always looked at this, and that's kind of how I've leaned. But after reading this, with the Titans having the first pick, I would challenge anybody to read this and really study it. Your brain might hurt for a little bit because there's a lot of
lingo there.
It's a
63-page paper.
I'm not telling you to read
this. You say your brain would be hurting for a little bit. No, their brain would be hurting for the rest of their lives, man.
Well, I'm not suggesting to read the 63-page.
Right, read the article in The Athletic that references.
The article will take you like 15 minutes.
You need more than Rocks for Jocks
exactly.
to understand
but basically what
the
happened,
actual paper.
Some football people, and I would say they have a profile of a Chad Brinker, right, have studied enough about what this stuff means, the math, and they are also enough of a football person that football people listen to them. I know Chad Brinker's stock is probably at an all-time low. Like, you can get him on the penny stocks, right? Mm-hmm. Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie, The Wolf of Wall Street, when he goes back to the, you know, remember he gets thrown out. He starts from the bottom. He's calling and getting people going on the penny stocks. Man, we can get some margins on this. And he builds himself back up. That's where Chad Brinker is right now. Right? Nobody really believes in him. Mm-hmm. But he does have the profile of being able to take analytics stuff and fancy schmancy economic studies that are 63-page long and then communicate to the old school football guys that are going, hey, what does all this stuff mean? Do we even care? Why should we care? You need those people to bridge the gap. So that's what happened historically with this. They took this study, a few people, mm-hmm. and said, hey, they're getting this all wrong. We got to figure out how we use it. And the ironic part is you can explain this to regular football people, GMs, owners, scouts, and they nod their head and go, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But when the time comes when it's your pick, they can't resist saying, we got to have this guy. Mm-hmm. I got to have Derek Mason. I believe in Derek Mason. Mm-hmm. Don't trade down and get maybe two Derek Masons. Mm-hmm. We got to have this Derek Mason right now. So this is what I think is really interesting. With the first pick, this is the synopsis of the 63-page study. The number one point, the treasured number one overall pick in the draft is actually the least valuable in the first round, according to the surplus value a team can create with that pick. So it doesn't mean that the first pick in the draft isn't a good player. Oftentimes he's a great player, could be a franchise changer, but sometimes it's not. And what you can get for that first pick over time, remember he studied 20-something drafts in a row, odds are you're going to get a lot more. In fact, teams generated a 174% return on trades by foregoing a pick this year for multiple picks in the following year. So the common thread was trading down to get more picks is effective. And okay. No more so than when you have the first pick in the draft. And here's the other little point that I thought was interesting. Across all rounds, the probability that a player starts more games than the next player chosen at his position is only 53%. So it's almost 50-50 that if you take the best linebacker on the board, that the next linebacker does just the same, if not better. It's about 50-50. And I realize not all drafts are the same, and there's a lot of nuance to this, but this is a study of the board over time. And it's not biased by any one draft or another. It's just studying the drafts every year and coming up with what are the themes that we see.
So basically this is just another formula that these two individuals over a course of time sort of went through, and this is based upon their findings.
Between 1988 and 2004.
This is a method. Right. This is another method of getting a good player and not wasting that number one pick. Now, again, there's a lot of variables. Like you said, there are a lot of other things that come into play, and I think the most notable thing is the fan base. Because the fan base wants to what? They want to win now.
Right. And see, this is what the article talks about. The emotions
exactly.
of trying to appease the fan base or appease the owner. Mm-hmm. The owner's desire to win. I don't care what these things are. We got to win right exactly. now. We got to take
that
this guy.
That may be the right
that's
way.
Why people make mistakes, mm-hmm. according to this. And that's their theory.
And maybe that could have been sort of one of the reasons why Amy chose to align herself with Brinker rather than Rand Carthon, because Rand was coming at it from we got to get the guy because we got to win now. Whereas Brinker's coming at it from a sort of, we got to build our team up and win that way. Because like you said, you may get that one guy and you may change your team. But then again, you may not get that one guy that you said was going to change your team. He may not change the fate of your franchise.
Here's one other small point that I think you will find interesting, Derek. You know who they thought was the best team over time at this principle of trading down to get more picks?
I would say it had, in recent memory, Baltimore.
Yes.
Bingo.
The Ravens are the best at doing that. That is, and they.
Which you can speak to from experience.
Yes. And who is it? Eric DaCosta. Talks about it proudly in the interview. He says, I don't know if it's – he said, I don't think this is that fancy. Basically, if you have more throws at the dartboard, we feel like we have a better chance. And Ozzie Newsome is also credited as being one of the front runners in working that principle.
You know why they're able
trading to – trading down and getting more picks.
You know why they're able to do that? Because the owner, as much as they love him, because they do. I mean, everybody throughout that building, I don't think there's a person that would have a bad thing to say about Mr. Bisciotti, me included. But the owner trusts the people that he's hired. He's not listening to the fan base, because the fan base would tell you, fire John Harbaugh. He's had his tenure here. Or in Pittsburgh, the fan base would say, well, it may be time for Tomlin to go. But the ownership says, no, we've hired good people. And we're going to be patient. We're not going to – that's why teams or organizations like Baltimore and Pittsburgh are able to win for a long period of time.
615-737-1025. We'll continue this conversation next, but we want you to get in on it as well. So 615-737-1025. Your philosophy as it relates to the Tennessee Titans and the number one overall pick. We'll do that next. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Maze, Fingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here. Talking an article from The Athletic from last April leading into last year's draft, which referenced a paper written in 2005, Overconfidence versus Market Efficiency in the National Football League, commissioned by the National Bureau of Economic Research. There was another interesting part of this story, Willie, that I clipped and I wanted to read aloud. Bill Polian, the longtime NFL executive, was mentioned in this story. So the author, Alec Lewis, writes, quote, "The idea of trading down in particular consistently repulsed Polian. I firmly do not believe you trade a high pick, which is going to be a difference maker, in order to pick up two picks. Napoleon said. But that's the issue, one former NFL executive pointed out. That logic assumes the player you're initially picking will actually become a difference maker. Quote, the problem for everyone in sports is that nobody wants to admit how random and arbitrary it is, the former executive said. Admitting that it's arbitrary takes away from your specific abilities.
Yes, and Bill Polian is a fascinating character in this because Polian truly believes that, and as you should, it's your job as a scout, as a GM, to be able to identify who the next great players are going to be. Mm-hmm. It's just an inexact science. That's what the study shows, is no matter how good you are, and Bill Polian, is he in the Hall of Fame? He built several different great teams. Mm-hmm. He's as good as there's been over the long Hall. He wasn't right all the time, but he doesn't really subscribe to what the study shows, because I've argued with a lot of friends over this, and it's talked about in here, how much luck is involved, right? You could do all the homework on a guy, all of the study, you're sure that he's going to be the next great X, but you got to be a little lucky too, don't you? I don't know what the percentage is, but I do think sometimes you can think you're smarter than everybody else, and in some cases, you're smarter than a lot of other teams that might be dysfunctional, and there's a lot of things in this article that talk about where the dysfunction comes from. Like you mentioned, D-Mace, mm-hmm. the lure of the fans telling you got to do this, you got to do this, but also within your think tank, one coach arguing something for his own side of the ball mm-hmm. versus another coach that's arguing for somebody on his side of the ball. Pulling at those forces, right? I think that's what the human element brings to this, whereas this study to me is poignant because it takes all of the emotion out and just looks at the results of 25 or 26 drafts.
And that's why there's not an exact science on how or what you should do with that number one pick. Now, there are people have – theories on how it should go or based upon what they've seen, written papers about how or what's the best way to sort of build your team. But if you're talking to a guy like Bill Polian, he's like, no, I'm not trading my picks. I'm taking a guy. But if you look at it, his last two really big drafts was drafting Peyton Manning and then drafting Andrew Luck. Well, when Peyton Manning came out, it was a no-brainer. I mean, everybody wanted Peyton Manning. Even if you had a quarterback, if you can get Peyton Manning, I think you would have gotten him.
Brian Callahan at the Senior Bowl was talking about the draft process. And mm-hmm. Yeah, that was yesterday. And I think the question was about when will you know? Like, when will you know which player rises to the top of your list? And he was like, well, in Cincinnati, we knew pretty early we were taking Joe Burrow. Like,
exactly.
you knew what you were getting.
So when you look at it from that prism, it's like, no, I'm not trading away no matter how many people I get.
And there's no question that has to be factored in. Like,
absolutely.
Shaquille O'Neal. Do you think the Magic weren't going to take Shaquille O'Neal when
come
they won
on
the lottery?
Now. I don't care what you get.
But the next year, they won the lottery again. Mm-hmm. And traded the pick. Remember, they took Chris Webber and then made the pick to get more picks to get uh-huh. Penny Hardaway.
Yes.
So they used both philosophies, right?
But it was different years.
Different years.
Based upon what they needed.
2 years in a row. I
exactly.
mean, you talk about getting lucky.
Absolutely. But
luck was involved in that. Orlando winning two straight lotteries to get the first pick.
Some magic, perhaps?
I can see sort of both sides of the coin. There's no sort of, right way. A wrong way. Some teams just have had luck, with the way that they've done it. Not to say that they've hit 100% of the time, but they've hit enough and at a particular position where, if they do miss, then we still got that quarterback that is going to lead our franchise. Just like Kansas City. It's like, okay, if we do miss on one of our first rounders, let's not miss on too many of them, but if we do miss on one of our first rounders, we still got Patrick Mahomes.
There was a question on our text line, which I found to be very interesting. An unnamed texter. So if you're listening, text us. I want to give you proper credit. One texter says, given the info that Willie just gave us, would you expect other teams to give up that surplus value for the first pick in this draft, which is considered maybe a weaker
That is a good question because every draft is different. But the theme of the article is that even though you should have learned by now, mm-hmm. there are still teams that cannot resist jumping up and taking the first round pick. But it's a fair question. This particular year, with these particular players, what would be the best offer you will get for the first pick in the draft? And how far do you have to go down? You know, there's all obviously very specific things they have to address. Do we want to go down to 3? Do we want to go down to 4? How far down are we willing to go to get what we want for that first round pick? For that first overall pick, what's the value? Because it's only worth what somebody's going to call you. You could say, hey, we think it's worth 3 first-rounders and 2 second-rounders. This is what our chart says it's worth. But if nobody calls you and offers that, then it's only worth what that best offer is.
Right. Yeah. One texter mentions the Giants. I guess the Giants are, according to the texter, desperate for Shedeur Sanders. Where are the Giants picking? Are they 2 or 3?
No.
4?
3 or 4, I think. But that's a great point. You hope, I think what you hope
4.
Is that people do, that 2 or 3 teams do fall in love with, whether it's Sanders or Cam Ward, whoever the first
They're
pick
third.
Is.
The Giants are 3rd.
But it's not even, see, I think we're in
You want listen, people compete. You want people yeah, competing for that first pick. That's how you really get the
I think we are just honing in, and rightfully so, because typically drafts are led by what? Quarterbacks, unless you have this extraordinary you know, guy like Travis Hunter at another position that may warrant, first overall pick type of transaction. But I think we always look at it from the prism of the quarterback. Like, there's no quarterback, so nobody's willing to move up. But that's an assumption. Somebody may be able to want to move up for Abdul Carter because they feel if they don't get him at number 1 or 2, somebody's going to take him at 3. So we got to do what's necessary to jump up to get him. Or Travis Hunter, they may say, we got our quarterback, but we still need to move up. New England, for instance, we feel we got our quarterback, but we may give up a little bit, just a tad bit more, because we want now that who we may think is that generational guy in Travis Hunter.
That's a good point. And another example from the past is Jared Goff. We went over to Adam and mentioned his record at California. He was a very nondescript, it was not a household name.
It wasn't
name
nothing
at
flashy.
All. Yeah, nobody had ever heard of him in college. Not really. And Carson Wentz, for that matter, who I think was the second pick in that draft. But they shot up the chart, and the Rams were willing to trade John Robinson, a pretty good haul that to his liking, to get Jared Goff.
Yeah.
He wasn't hyped up. I don't remember, Jared Goff, you got to go get Jared Goff. He is the hands down. That wasn't the conversation for that particular draft.
615-737-1025 will continue this conversation to start our final hour. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game.